Well, gang, it's October, and Miles is making me watch all sorts of different franchise fright scary movies. But with this one, gonna be honest, I got no context and no German accent. We're talking about Puppet Master 3. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd, where we are into franchise frights, not fights. Well, we might fight about this one. I don't know. We'll see. We've already fought that I didn't record about the pronunciation of the main character's name, but but I'll tell you the pronunciation of my name. My name is Drew, and I am here with my six-armed gunslinging compatriot, Miles. How are you, my friend?
Doing all right. This episode was delayed because my area is still experiencing difficulties thanks to a hurricane that hit a month ago and my internet was knocked out for a day and a half. But otherwise now things seem to be a little bit more normal. And I'm excited to dive into another franchise horror film with you. I'm excited to be doing this. I mean, more. Just because, you know, I finally get to like kind of enjoy the season a little bit now that surviving is no longer concerned.
Yeah. And this one was weird because I have never seen a Puppet Master movie. Not a single one. I am passingly familiar with the concept. I've never investigated because this was one that unlike Freddy Krueger and Jason and Halloween and all those other movies that had the big sort of big named character, Puppet Master always felt let's say more B movie tier than the other ones.
Very fair.
And learning that this movie in particular was direct to video also firmly nestles that into
we've talked about a Full Moon Pictures film before when I made you and Patrick watch Arcade several years ago, probably almost 10 years ago at this point, who knows.
That was the one with Ralphie from A Christmas Story.
Ralphie and Seth Green.
Oh, forgot Seth Green.
And Q.
Yep.
John Delancey's in that.
I passingly remember some of that movie.
Growing up, for whatever reason, Chucky has never been a massive part of my life in terms of the killer doll movies. Like, I've seen them. I like some of them. I don't like others. But for me, Puppet Master from an early age, like, captured my imagination. I remember seeing the trailer for it on the pay-per-view channel. They would just show trailers all the time, you know, if you weren't actually paying. And I remember seeing the puppet designs, thinking they were really cool, specifically Blade. He's kind of the mascot for the franchise. And so, you know, as I was able to start renting these movies or go to slumber parties, I have a specific memory. I watched this movie for the first time at a slumber party during the Halloween season in the early 90s. And Full Moon, and I think I've made this comparison before, like, felt like I was watching comic books. And I mean that, like, not comic book movies, but like there is a kind of late teen comic book quality, like your Tales from the Crypt comics, like your Dark Horse kind of stuff, to all of their movies. There is, and this one too, like, obviously it's R-rated, but it's not crazy R, and it still feels like I'm watching like an R-rated episode of like an Are You Afraid of the Dark or Goosebumps in terms of its tone.
There is tone wise for sure. There's really only two scenes that get this an R rating, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And there is a moment that will not make anyone laugh but me, because I have a very vivid memory of that scene and hearing Quincy Halliday shout in a room full of, like, we were all in the living room of my friend's house, and during the one of those scenes, hearing this kid drop his popcorn ball and point the string going, she's got bigger Hooters than Madonna. Oh, Lord. It will never leave my brain. Like that is the vivid memory that I share with about this movie. because we were like 10 or 11 years old, you know, watching a movie that we weren't supposed to see. Because, you know, everyone had several friends who had parents that were very lenient on what you could rent with a group. And so these movies came out pretty frequently, not just the Puppet Master movies, but Full Moon features. And so they always felt like I was just like kind of getting a new issue of something. And they treated it that way. When you got the videotape from the video store, they had a additional magazine, like a video magazine called Video Zone, that would come on after the credits rolled, of like the making of the movie and what stuff Full Moon was doing next and what they had on the slate that was going to follow this movie. It was a really cool press kit that honestly was pretty innovative at the time. I love this specific movie because obviously it's killer puppets versus Nazis. And I mean, again, it sounds like something that a 12-year-old would make.
Yeah, this film is quite interesting. And obviously being a prequel, I have no context for anything from the original movie. And of course, this, since this is a prequel, me in 2024 is looking at this like saying, oh, so I bet this is a character who shows up older later, or this is a character that has something to do with something down the line. They're setting that up. The only thing that seems to be the case, as Miles is looking at me, is the creation of the, I guess, Blade is the character.
Yeah, Blade is created in this film. Blade was already in the other two films, and to this day is one of the most popular puppets. I actually used to have a cool Blade statue that is no longer with me. But I've been a lifelong Puppet Master fan. That said, there is an initial run of these films, which is 1 through 5. The franchise kind of ended in 1994. And as Full Moon was struggling at the end of the decade, they tried to bring it back, and they haven't really made a great Puppet Master movie since.
I looked just a moment ago. The most recent Puppet Master film that I know you know when it came out.
Mm-hmm.
2022.
Dr. Death.
Yeah, a post-pandemic Puppet Master film actually exists, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, so they came back. So Full Moon went out of business for a while. And they came back. Charles Band obviously knew that he had to bring one of his classic franchises back. They had tried in the 2000s to do a deal with the Sci-Fi Channel for Puppet Master versus Demonic Toys, which is something that people had wanted for a while and then wish they didn't get. It's very bad. When they brought Full Moon back for real, they started a trilogy because Puppet Master 3 is one of the most popular of their movies. People love that movie. People love the puppets versus Nazis. And so they had they started what they called the Axis trilogy. It was Axis of Evil, Axis Rising, and something else. Which were all, you know, using the Nazis as bad guys. And this is one of those movies that I feel like, for whatever reason, like Full Moon has always, it's one of the few times they understood what they had. And I mean, this movie actually changed the trajectory of the franchise. There is stuff in this movie that they weren't going to utilize down the road until the response to this movie came back, including a retcon. The first movie has Andre Toulon in 1939, killing himself to avoid interrogation by the Nazis. Well, this movie starts in 1941, so...
interesting.
So, yeah, this is why I chose this movie for you, because you don't have to have seen the first two movies, and this is better than the first two movies, in my personal opinion.
Interesting. I am now interested to see what the story is of this one. But let's focus on this movie, where, again, this is another one where, you know, normally when we're introduced to the gang of murderous puppets in these movies, they're the bad guys. But when you got puppets versus Nazis, it's pretty easy to root for the puppets.
It is. And this movie kind of helps really kind of hammer in something that's insinuated in the first two movies, is that the puppets aren't evil puppets. They're not Chucky. They are murderous, but in the first two, they're more trying to protect a secret. And they're trying to protect Toulon's legacy. They're trying to keep the Nazis from getting it, which is something we don't really know that much about until we see this movie, but everything kind of clicks. But again, you don't have to have seen those to like this one, because everything here takes place before the first film. There's no callbacks that you're like, aha, except for the creation of Blade and Leech Woman.
So I want to talk about some of the cast, because Miles, you may know this, you may not know this, but the first person that we introduced in this movie is Major Kraus, who's this evil German, as I used in air quotes, because the German accents were all over the place in this movie.
Yeah, they very, very much are.
Including some characters that just don't have them at all. Some characters that are speaking full German with no subtitles. I presume it's real German. I don't know. But Major Kraus is played by an actor named Richard Lynch. And Richard Lynch, I know from a number of things. He was in, but the thing that I know him best from, and why
I know exactly what you're going
to
say,
and why I may refer to him as Grandma through the recording of this. And when I saw him pop up in this movie, I texted my wife, Grandma's in this movie. And yes, she knew who I was talking about. He plays the doctor, like the sort of head of the archaeological dig in a terrible 90s movie called Werewolf, which was made infamous.
Werewolf.
Werewolf, which was made infamous because of MST3K.
And how good that episode is.
It's one of the best episodes of MST3K. And it is an MST3K that gets watched in this house so much. So much that I found a DVD of the original uncut version of the movie and presented it to my wife
a couple wild.
I presented it to my wife for her birthday a couple of years ago. It doesn't make any more sense with the uncut version.
No. It's one of those movies that like I only watch with the commentary, just because it unless I'm with a group of people, it's fun to have it. It's fun to watch it one time, but like, otherwise I'm just going to watch, you know.
I'm going to ramble a little bit about Werewolf because I think it's fantastic, but there is a moment where there's, you know, it's all about a writer who moves into his mom's house after she passes away and becomes a werewolf. So you see a lot of views of the house, and you see a lot of downtown in this town where there's a bar that they go to a couple of times. And because of the nature of the movie in the MST3K version, which edits for time content, you never learn in the MST3K version that the bar is across the street from the house. It's literally right there. So when the main character goes missing at one point, leaving the bar in a hurry, they frantically search to run to his house, and you don't know that it's just across the street. It's very funny. Anyway, that is one of the first characters that we were introduced to. Richard Lynch is Major Kraus. It's also funny that he shows up in a season 7 Star Trek The Next Generation episode called Gambit, which is a 2-part episode where Captain Picard goes undercover as part of like a illegal archaeological smuggling thing. And Richard Lynch plays the evil smuggler captain in that. And that is an episode that ends up showing up on my house randomly a lot because it plays on Pluto TV a lot. But that brings me to the next character that we're kind of introduced to, a young man named Peter Hertz, played by the late, great Aaron Eisenberg, Nog from Star Trek Deep Space Nine. There's a lot of Star Trek connections in this movie.
So that was the one I was most excited about you seeing, was like, because I didn't mention anything about this movie. But I know Drew. And so I knew that, like, as soon as he appeared, you were going to know who that was.
Yeah. So this is the thing about this character that I And I understand that this is what Aaron Eisenberg did fairly frequently because of just how he looked. But the character of Peter reads like he is 12 years old or supposed to be.
He's supposed to be about 12 years old. Yeah.
Do you know how old Aaron Eisenberg was when this movie came out?
I do.
Ah, you do know. Shoot. Yeah, he was 22 filming this.
Yeah.
And that just makes it more awkward. Like, somehow when he's under all the Nog makeup, which would have been a couple of years after this that kicked off. Actually, when was Deep Space Nine? I always think of Star Trek being later than it was. But
93, wasn't it?
I think you are right, which would have been 2 years later.
Oh, and it's also interesting because, like,
he's 93, so he would have been 20.
Maybe he stopped doing it for the roles, but, like, you see photos from the late 90s, and he looks more like more of his age.
Yeah.
Because, like, he shaved his head and he kind of let some stubble grow out. And
you know, just age catches up to you, you know, that's what happens to you. But yeah, he had kidney issues his whole life. And so he grew up and was kind of just shorter and looked younger as a result. And it was always funny when he was on Deep Space Nine, because he plays, again, a child. He plays Jake Sisko's best friend.
Right.
And Jake Sisko's actor was like 13 or 14. And Aaron Eisenberg is 22 or 23 filming that.
Although it does warm my heart to know that they like in life became very good friends and like podcasted together. And like it, I remember when he passed, like they had like a whole month called like Nog Forever on the podcast that they did. And I actually haven't brought myself to listen to those episodes just because, like, I get emotional about it. Because Nog is one of my favorite characters in Star Trek.
Yes, Nog has maybe the best character development story in Star Trek.
I would fully agree.
It's going to take me a lot of time to figure out something that's better. But yeah,
Beckett Mariner.
Yeah, and we'll see in season 5 that I've watched twice now already. So let's get back to Puppet Master.
Yeah.
Because basically, here's the story of this movie. The Nazis are losing the war. They're already fighting on the Eastern Front, which didn't happen until after Toulon was supposed to have killed himself in the first movie. So losing on the Eastern Front, they're losing on the Western Front. And they have these bodies that this scientist named Dr. Hess, played by Ian Abercrombie, who is another guy that you've seen in so many things.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, like, I mean, I would say, like, if you're a 90s person, most famously, like, you know, for a lot of people, Elaine's Boss.
Yeah, if you're a Star Wars fan, he was often the voice of Palpatine in the Clone Wars series.
And this isn't like talking about his many, like, he's been in so many movies, including, I think he's in a Bond movie, I feel like.
Probably, almost certainly, although I couldn't tell you. He was in Twin Peaks. I mean, he's been in so many things. He was Ganthet in the Green Lantern animated series, which was great and canceled too soon. But yeah, he is basically trying to somehow get these bodies to reanimate Frankenstein style just to march in front of soldiers so that they get mowed down first, so that their soldiers that are still alive have more of a fighting chance.
Yes, and not only that, but if they are alive, they can serve as shields. Like, they'll just keep on walking and get and take, be basically be bullet sponges. That is the larger aim for it. And I think his character is interesting because while he is certainly a Nazi doctor, he doesn't really seem to care whether or not the Nazis are doing well.
So this
he just wants to do science.
This is one of those things that bothers me about, like,
oh no, no, it's certainly bothersome.
It's one of those things where I've seen stuff like that, like they're a scientist working for the bad guys because the bad guys will give them money and time and energy into their weird
Krieger from Archer
into their weird creepy projects. I just, the script doesn't do it any favors for explaining this.
No, because you only really find that out in like the third act.
Right, because he's just a Nazi trying to get the job done before that. This episode will probably take the record for the most amount of the most times we've used the word Nazi. So enjoy that, I guess. Meanwhile, you've also got André Toulon, who is basically a puppeteer, serving as a puppeteer in this. And again, there is some backstory that I'm sure was explained in prior movies about some of all this stuff. Is this the first reference to Egypt? This is the first reference to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. The late 80s.
I told you. I didn't take anything from you. There might be a hint, but this is the first time that any of that's really properly delved into. And they don't delve into it again until like another 10 years.
Yeah. So basically,
in Retro Puppet Master.
So we learn later on in the movie. The plot of this movie doesn't matter. It's goofy. It's weird. I told you,
it's a comic book. It really is a comic book.
It's a comic book and it's a comedy. It is funny.
It's very funny in some
ways. But basically he has these puppets that he puts in this green liquid and they're actually alive. And we learned sort of later on in the movie that, this is not a secret. It's in every it's in a history book in every library on the planet, blah, 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 blah. He's basically using Lazarus Pit juice, like from Batman, the Lazarus Pit to put people's souls into puppets.
Yeah. And even that is like, again, the Puppet Master lore is very fluid. And even the movie Retro Puppet Master that explains everything is extremely controversial amongst fans. It's also Puppet Master: The Legacy, and is largely not really accepted for like I said, everything after five is kind of you pick and choose.
Let me tell you something I just learned about Retro Puppet Master and Puppet Master: The Legacy. Do you know who plays André Toulon in those movies, Miles?
Is it still Guy Rolfe?
In the older versions, yes. Same guy from this movie. But in the flashbacks, he's played by Greg Sestero. Do you know who Greg Sestero is?
Yes. I meant to bring that up because, like, this is pre The Room, Greg Sestero.
Pre The Room. So Greg Sestero is Mark. If you've ever seen The Room, which is not Room, the Oscar-winning movie, but The Room by Tommy Wiseau, one of the worst movies of all time. Watch it with friends. It's a very fun time. It's very stupid. Greg Sestero plays Mark, the best friend of Tommy Wiseau's main character. Oh, hi, Mark. He's the Mark in question. Greg Sestero. Not in this movie. I just found it very interesting that he was in that movie.
Yeah.
And then apparently returned for the 2022 Puppet Master Dr. Death. So we have that to look forward to as we watch every Puppet Master movie, because that's just what we're going to do from now on. This is a Puppet Master cast.
Some of you haven't seen 20 years, so.
I do have, so we learn through this that he has to know the person really well that he is turning into a puppet. He does have to make the puppet, and he also has to get something from their body.
Yeah,
that we don't see, because when we're also introduced to André Toulon's wife, Elsa, who lets it go when she is shot in the chest by the Nazis and then in the head by the Nazis and killed to get André to give up his secret. Well, it turns out when you kill his wife, he's not going to do that. And he's going
to do that. Yeah,
he's going to sick his puppets on
like. They were going to call the ambulance, but like, I mean, and bless her for it. Elsa's like, nah, and spits on the dude who then in turn shoots her in the head. Which, like, on one hand, I don't blame her one bit, but at the same time, like, she would have survived. Yeah. He does turn her to a puppet, the infamous leech woman. And we don't get the most famous puppet from the series until closer to the end of the movie. We do get our classics. We have Pinhead, we have Six Shooter, and Jester, and
pardon me, Miles. I believe Six Shooter was created for this movie. He was new to this movie.
He was. One of the things about Puppet Master movies is that they often try to introduce a brand new puppet at some point in each film. Now, Six Shooter, it was weird because he doesn't die in this movie.
And I'm sure he'll come back in future movies.
Oh, he 100% does. But it's I don't know, it's kind of funny. Because he's back in 4 and 5. And it's been so long since I've watched 4 and 5. I kind of wanted to go back and rewatch them and bust open my box set. But I don't think they explain, like, his not being in 1 and 2 at all.
The other thing they don't explain is who is in Blade. Because Blade's design, and honestly, I think that having not Ian Abercrombie, who am I
Dr. Hess.
No, having Richard Lynch as Major Krause, who just happens to look enough like the Blade puppet
He's modeled after Krause, but he's got the soul of Dr. Hess.
Which they don't explain on screen at all. I just kind of put two and two together with that.
The Puppet Master lore is very muddied. This is not Marvel. This is not, I mean, honestly, Halloween. Well, no, well, not Halloween. Friday the 13th has a cleaner lore than Puppet Master does. Most people just kind of like, I want to watch these puppets, you know, kill some things and fight Nazis and we're good.
Yeah. And that's basically the movie. The Nazis want Toulon's ability to resurrect the dead. He doesn't want to give it to them. They kill his wife, and he spends the rest of the movie using his puppet assassins, pretending to be
Batman on the Nazis.
Pretending to be a blind man walking around Berlin.
I gotta talk about this Berlin. I actually think the production value of the sets is pretty solid for a direct-to-video movie from the 90s. I know we're not in 1940s Berlin. Like, this isn't like Saving Private Ryan, but like the sets they have are pretty good.
They also, for a couple of shots, used newsreel footage of city streets of the time, which was interesting. The opening moment, though, has sort of a hazy skyline of Berlin that has way more neon than I expected, as well as like a big Philips logo in the background. It's like, I'm not sure if that was there. I don't know.
These are direct to video. I mean, so Charles Band, who is the owner of Full Moon, the original creator of Puppet Master, the writer of Confessions of a Puppet Master,
the musician behind the theme music to Puppet Master.
Yes. His son is one of the little Cairo children playing in the flashback scene. Son's a musician too. I think he's in a band called The Calling or something. They had a minor hit about 20 years ago. He's known for kind of like, kind of doing these sort of things. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. In this movie, it works. I love the stop motion for the puppets in this movie. I think it's pretty strong. Again, for a direct-to-video movie from the early 90s, it was pretty impressive.
It was pretty impressive. There were only, and granted, we did watch like a remastered version. They remastered this movie in 2012, I want to say.
Yeah, it's for the DVD release, I think.
Yeah, and Blu-ray and DVD both came out in 2012. And so the movie looks really good. Like, it was really sharp. Did not feel straight to video in that respect. So I don't know whether they shot it on film and were able to upscale it that way.
A little bit of both. I mean, the thing about full moon movies is, you know, a lot of times, especially later, they would find like cheap places like in Europe and stuff to shoot. And you know, they are very low budget and get more so. But when they have the movies that like really make an impact, your Subspecies, your Castle Freak, stuff like that. The production value is always solid. Like, you can tell that some money was spent there. That becomes less and less a thing. They become more and more shoestring. But like, there was a kind of magic moment in time where Full Moon like was direct to video, clearly not a Hollywood budget, but still did something pretty impressive with the budget they had. And this movie's one of them. Like the scene where like a six shooter is like climbing up the building to assassinate the major. The Nazi major who is in a brothel in the infamous Madonna scene from my childhood.
That's the reason this movie's got an R rating, gang. That's it.
Well, that and the phone call. There's two sequences. He's getting bathed by a bunch of naked women when he's on the phone. Like, and it just shoots to him like on the phone with these people. And then he has to, I have an important meeting in town. And obviously he's visiting his favorite lady at the brothel.
Yeah. It was funny watching Six Shooter climb up the outside. You could legit just see the strings on it. And I was like, that's hilarious. But it was also like, well, he's a puppet. I mean, it kind of makes sense that they would put strings on there. And they show him like actually climbing up like Spider-Man style. Like, oh, yeah. No, that was just a cheap effect. It was also one when Pinhead suddenly had human hands. That was a weird one.
Yeah, I mean they do try to, like, you know, and they do that with him a lot, because like Pinhead's supposed to be kind of like the, you know, the strong puppet. Jester's always one that's kind of like, not really sure what he does.
He's got knives. He's got
knives and he's fast, but like, you know, Tundler has the drill on his head, Leech Woman has the leeches, Blade obviously has the knives, or the you know, the knife and the hook. It's a bunch of cool puppets. They're killing Nazis. This is not a difficult movie to like track. It's not like, I know we've talked a lot about like what the Puppet Master lore means, because it's the third movie in a franchise, but really this could be the only Puppet Master movie you watch and you're totally fine. Like, if you didn't know that this was the third one, you would have been totally fine.
Probably. Yeah. Probably.
Because like, they do a good job with the story. It's pretty simple, but like, he's a puppeteer. He's also, you know, it's in the middle of the Nazi reign in the war, and he's making satire about the Nazis, mostly about Hitler being a coward and getting shot by an American Western puppet.
I'm sorry. Hey, let me make sure that got through.
Now, the Sixer's little laugh is so funny to me. But I kind of wish it was said a little bit earlier, because like, when you make it in the middle of the war, it's like, yeah, no duh, they hunt you down. Like, if you were like, I mean, he has this great little thing of like, you know, satire is a sign of a healthy society.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, but bro, you were in the middle of World War II. You are not in a healthy society. Like, if this was like during the fall of the Weimar Republic or something, I could see that being like, you know, a little more viable. But like in the middle of the war, no, Toulon, bro, you're just dumb.
Yeah, like, you're French. You know what has happened to France at this point.
Well, yeah, and it's like, it's not that he's making dissident movies and then like fleeing somewhere. He's putting on like public puppet shows to children
in one place.
So it's like, you know, yeah, exactly. Like, here's a neon sign of where I am. And here I have like Hitler being a coward. It is an annoying thing for me, because you're like, yeah, of course they hunt him down. You know, I get that people are like, no, you should be able to do this. I agree. But you were in Nazi Germany. like in Berlin.
Yeah.
Like you're not in France. You're not in any of the occupied Allied territories. You are in Berlin. Like with your biggest Stan Nog. who I love that, like, you know, he has this little kid psychic who he's trying to protect. Like all the stuff that Nog gets into, or Peter gets into, is on his own volition. Like he's the one who goes to Tulan's old workshop to get the stuff to fix Six Shooter. And that's where he runs into Dr. Hess, who legitimately wants to talk. He legit just wants to have an academic conversation with Tulan. Like at a certain point in this movie, it's like, Nazis be damned. I want to talk to this guy because he's a genius and I want to learn. And he even says, in another life, we could have done such great work together. It's a very flawed movie that has some really, really wonderful moments. It's not scary. Like even as a kid,
not in the slightest.
No. Yes, you have murderous puppets, but these are not Chucky.
The scariest part of the movie is at the very beginning when there is a bloody, like realistically bloody looking dead soldier on a table that comes to life and attacks somebody. That's about the scariest thing in the movie. And it's in the first 5 minutes and then it never happens again.
Yes. But this was a movie that like I said, they were like adult comic books and they were the fodder of slumber parties like my entire childhood. And I feel like if we're going to make a bridge of like, you know, Trunk or Treat, this was another movie that's kind of like a rite of passage, is like finding direct to video schlock. And I have such an affinity for Full Moon movies and especially the Puppet Master series. And so I had to share it with you. I knew you'd be like, what am I watching? But I also think you might have had fun with it. I hope you had fun with it.
I mean, it was you had to go into it with the right expectation. And luckily I did, because the log line is puppets versus Nazis. That's so silly.
Also, sign me up.
I guess. Oh, and this movie ends with a title card of Puppet Master 4. When bad puppets go good,
which is funny because this entire movie, they're the good guys. And however, in 4 and 5, which is a shared two-parter film series, they fight demons. So, you know, what's more evil than the Nazis? Well, I guess we got to go demons,
I guess.
And it's actually a pretty fun two-parter. It also introduces some new puppets like Torch. Tulan's spirit talks to the new puppet master who is helping the puppets fight the demons. It's great. I love it. I need to rewatch those movies. But I'm glad you had fun. This is not a scary movie, but it's fun slumber party Halloween schlock fare that I think that, you know, Full Moon is around, but like, yeah, you gotta dust off these gems.
Yeah. Well, Miles, wrapping that up, I know it seems a little early from that, but we've had a weird week, gang.
Yeah, we have.
What are we doing next week?
So I've been going back and forth between two movies for our final, sadly, our final week of Halloween celebration. And I know that you've only seen one Halloween film, the first one, correct?
Yes.
So I've been going back and forth, and I'm erring on the side of what's easiest because of the weeks that we've had and because it's so late in the week when we're recording. We are going to watch 2018's Halloween, which is a direct sequel to the first film. You've only ever had to see the first one, does not follow the second at all. And it takes place about 40 years later. I was going to do Halloween 4, but you haven't seen Halloween 2. And while it's not 100% necessary, there are some important scenes in there. So
we'll see.
We're going to go with Halloween 2018, because I know you haven't seen it. And it's one I watch pretty regularly. I love the Halloween franchise, despite how uneven it is. And I'm excited to get your take on this revival. This was very popular. It launched a brand new trilogy in the franchise. It certainly helped Blumhouse keep the coffers full. And so, yeah, we're gonna ring in Halloween with Halloween.
Well, how about that? So that's going to do it for this episode, gang. If you would like to reach out to us, you can find us at themoreynerd.com, where you can find this and every other episode. Tweet to us at themoreynerd, facebook.com/themoreynerd. And of course, you can email us themoreynerd@gmail.com. That's themoreynerd@gmail.com. Also, Miles and I are part of the cast of another show called Cosmic Crit. It is a sci-fi RPG podcast. Well, I still am. Miles hasn't been on in like a month and a half.
yeah, I really haven't.
But he will be back, hopefully next week. We have a good time over there. And if you go to CosmicCrit.com, you can find that entire show, 6 or 7 years running. But you can also join the Cosmic Crit Discord. And this is a really cool place where you can play your own games with other people, or you can just talk to me and Miles while we're bored at work all day. So with that said, gang, we're going to end the show now, as we always do, with a rousing nerd out.
Two nerd for y'all.